Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Tomorrow, the Select House Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot will hold its first hearing. We will carry it live here on WNYC. It's scheduled to start at 9:30 tomorrow morning. The committee, as of now, has only two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, after House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy and Speaker Nancy Pelosi couldn't agree on which other Republicans would serve. Speaker Pelosi said this yesterday on ABC This Week.
Maybe the Republicans can't handle the truth, but we have a responsibility to seek it, to find it, and in a way that retains the confidence of the American people.
But in this atmosphere, does Pelosi have confidence the committee's findings will be accepted broadly by the American people?
My confidence is high. I do believe that the work of this committee, in order to retain the confidence of the American people, must act in a way that has no partisanship, is all about patriotism.
Speaker Pelosi yesterday on ABC This Week. With me now on that and more Monday Morning Politics is NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Thanks as always, Mara. Welcome back to WNYC.
Happy to be here.
Can you give us a preview of what will happen in the committee hearing tomorrow?
Well, I can't tell you exactly what will happen, but we know that this is a committee that the minority leader in the House, Kevin McCarthy, is basically boycotting. There are no Republicans that he's appointed on it because the two that he chose originally were Jim Jordan and Congressman Banks, who Nancy Pelosi decided not to accept. So then he pulled all the other Republicans that he had appointed off. So now there are still going to be two Republicans on the committee, but they are appointed by Pelosi. That's Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, both critics of Donald Trump, both people who have been pretty much rejected by the Republican Party establishment in the House.
Well, what do you see as the likely role of Cheney and Kinzinger? They certainly both have a record of being critical of Trump, but they are still Republicans. Do you expect them to play a particular role or just be indistinguishable from Democrats if we didn't already know their party?
Well, I don't know yet. I think that they are as interested in getting to the bottom of what happened on January 6th as all the Democratic members. They're not interested in making the committee look like a partisan witch hunt, which certainly other Republicans want to do. They'll do it from the outside now. They're not on the inside. But I think there are a lot of questions that Liz Cheney wants answered, just like the Democrats. What was Donald Trump's role on January 6th? What were the contents of his conversations with House Republicans, including Kevin McCarthy? Don't forget Jim Jordan, who was once almost on the committee, will probably be subpoenaed to testify before the committee.
Huh.
So there's going to be a lot of investigation. Obviously, the Republicans who are not on the committee will try to make this out as a partisan exercise. But I still think a lot of facts can be uncovered by this committee.
Why would Jim Jordan, conservative Ohio congressman, be among those subpoenaed?
Oh, because of conversations he had with White House officials, because he might have some information about how the organizing for the rally occurred, and also what happened on that day.
Do you have a sense of who else might be subpoenaed or what kind of witness list?
Well, the first people we're going to hear from are Capitol Police officers, and we know that several of them were brutally beaten by the rioters that day. So that's going to be the first day. And this is the kind of committee that is just guaranteed to be covered live on television. I mean, this was a dramatic day full of violence. These were people who attacked police officers, and there's plenty of footage of police officers being beaten, and there are also police officers who are going to come up and tell what it was like that day for them.
Kind of to that point, I want to replay the second clip that we aired a couple of minutes ago of Speaker Pelosi on ABC this week. And listen to the end of this when she invokes patriotism.
My confidence is high. I do believe that the work of this committee, in order to retain the confidence of the American people, must act in a way that has no partisanship, is all about patriotism.
Do the Democrats and the Republicans have very different definitions of patriotism when it comes to January 6th?
Well, sure. I mean, Donald Trump has praised the people who breached the Capitol. He said they were ushered in by Capitol police officers. They were loving people, and he has certainly called them patriots. And a big chunk of the Republican voters in polls say that they believe the people who were rioting that day were defending freedom. So, of course, there's a difference there. But look, this is the most partisan issue in America right now. Whether or not you believe that Donald Trump was elected, was defeated fair and square. Now, the facts are that he was, but he continues to insist that the election was stolen from him. Big majorities of Republican voters believe him. And that's all wrapped up in what happened on January 6th, because he encouraged his supporters to go up to the Capitol. He didn't tell them to be violent, but he did encourage them to go up. He encouraged them to put pressure on members of the House to decertify or reject the slates of electors coming from the states. He wanted the election results to be overturned. And that is what the insurrectionists wanted, too. So this is an extremely partisan exercise just by definition, but I do think that some basic facts can come out, and they will.
And you mentioned yesterday on Weekend Edition that polling shows 30% of Republicans sympathized with the rioters. Do you know what sympathized means? Like, do 30% of Republicans think the election certification that day should have been overturned by the force of a small mob?
Well, I think that I would put it differently. I think at least 30% of Republicans, much more, think, the election results should have been overturned by the House of Representatives. We know that because 2/3 of the House Republicans voted to overturn the results of the election. We had a handful of members of the Republican caucus in the Senate. So, yes, of course, they don't think they should have been overturned by violent rioters, but they certainly think it should have been overturned by Republican members of Congress. That's what Donald Trump was asking for that day. And that's what a majority of House Republicans, 2/3 of them, voted for.
Listeners, we can take your questions and comments for NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson about the Select House Committee on the January 6th Capitol riot, which will hold its first hearing tomorrow. We expect this show to be preempted in whole or in part tomorrow morning for live coverage of that hearing. Also on the politics and public health of vaccinations now, which we'll get to, which Mara has reported on, or any other national politics that Mara may be following, 646-435-7280, or tweet your question or comment at Brian Lehrer. I'm going to go back again to that clip of Pelosi from ABC This Week yesterday that we played. She said she has high confidence that whatever the committee ultimately reports will be broadly accepted across party lines. Do you see the committee as taking specific steps to maximize the chance that that happens among all these skeptical Republicans who we were just talking about?
Well, I don't know exactly why Nancy Pelosi thinks that the committee can convince a whole bunch of people who believe the election was stolen that it wasn't. But we'll see. I think that the committee can establish facts. I mean, this is something that has not been investigated in public. And you're going to have, as I said, police officers starting tomorrow talk about what happened that day. I mean, there was a mob of people chanting, you know, hang Mike Pence. There were people going through the halls of Congress looking for Nancy Pelosi. There was violence committed against Capitol police officers, and all that can be established. Whether this committee can change public opinion when you have 70% of Republicans believing Donald Trump's falsehood that the election was stolen from him. I don't know if the committee can change those minds, but she certainly has high hopes for it.
I could also make a case that Pelosi shouldn't care that much who accepts it at first. It's just her job and the committee's job to get the facts on the table, and public opinion will be what it is, and it can change over time.
Right, right. And I think in general, it's probably a bad idea to predict how you can affect public opinion, especially at a time when we're so deeply, deeply divided and polarized.
You said on Weekend Edition Sunday that the hearing could uncover a lot of what we still don't know. There's a lot we do know by now. So what do you think are some of the main things that we don't know that the committee would try to uncover?
Well, I think, were there any contacts, conversations between members of Congress and the people who came up to the Capitol that day in advance? What were the conversations between House leaders and Donald Trump that day? We do have reports of a conversation between Kevin McCarthy and Donald Trump that came from Jamie Herrera Butler, another Republican member of the House, where she said she recounted what she was told by Kevin McCarthy that he talked to Donald Trump about, but we haven't heard about that firsthand. So there are a lot of things that happened that day that we don't know about. Also, just the basic facts about why it took so long for the Capitol Police to get the reinforcements they were asking for, hours and hours. And one of the things that Republicans want to focus on is why the Capitol wasn't defended well enough. You know, should they have anticipated a violent insurrection at the Capitol? And why didn't they? Or if they did, why weren't they better prepared? So there are lots and lots of things we still don't know.
Let's take a phone call. Tyson in the South Bronx. You're on WNYC with NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Hi, Tyson. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Brian. And Mara, I just want to say you are one of the icons of NPR, and I just love the fact that you're still with NPR.
Thanks. Also, 150 years later.
Keep on going. Yeah. I really appreciate you and bringing this to light, and I have a two-part question. Number one, I heard on NPR and WNYC that former Governor Kaine believes that there should be an independent commission, and the second part of my question is, how can America unite itself when all the Republicans seem to totally disregard the truth, even though their lives were at stake on January 6th? And also, where is the Democratic pit bull to beat back all the lies and falsehoods that continue to plague our country?
Okay, well, I'll try to take them in order. In terms of a independent commission, that was voted down. Republicans rejected that. It was passed by the House, and in the Senate, it was rejected. That's why there's not an independent committee or commission. That's why Nancy Pelosi created this select committee, which Republicans also voted against, but it's a House committee, so you didn't need the Senate for that. That's why there's no independent commission. I've heard that it's possible that President Biden could have created one, but I think he wants to leave this to Congress. He feels that's the rightful place this should be investigated. In terms of...
Go ahead.
Pardon?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
Oh, and in terms of how to bring the country together, that's a real tough one, especially when you have so many people who believe that something that just isn't true, that the election was stolen, that there was massive fraud. You know, in a democratic society, we have a referee, and it's called the judicial branch. And when there's a conflict, when people disagree on facts, you go to a court and you resolve it. And there were at least 60 court cases around the election alleging fraud. Some of them said they were alleging fraud and then had no evidence of fraud. And not a single one was found to have significant voter fraud in these elections. And there have been several, many, many audits of the votes, recounts in states that were key battleground states. And there just hasn't been any evidence of fraud. But Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party, and he continues to insist on this. And I don't know how you convince his supporters otherwise. In terms of the pit bull, I don't think there is going to be one single Democratic pit bull. I think there are just going to be a lot of Democrats who are trying to, convince the public about what happened that day.
Vicki in Tudor City. You're on WNYC with Mara Liasson. Hello, Vicki.
Good morning. My question is this. Since the crowd seemed to have a plan, or the mob, I should say, to, in quotation marks, depose the vice president, Pence, and Nancy Pelosi, if they had been taken down the way that they were being targeted, would that have created martial law, and would that have enabled the former president to somehow overturn the election and declare himself the winner?
Geez, those are a lot of hypotheticals, and I just don't know the answer to that question. I mean, that's a lot of ifs. I just don't know.
Do you think that the committee will investigate how far down that road organizers of the riot, whoever the organizers were, and for that matter, Donald Trump, who is still the sitting president at that moment, and we've certainly heard things about, including in the new book by the Washington Post correspondents, Rucker and Lenig, the other day on this show, how Trump may have been interested in sowing so much chaos in one scenario or another that there would be enough of a violent backlash that he could then try to justify declaring martial law.
Yeah, I don't know if the committee is going to get the answers to those questions, but they might, especially around the question of why, when requests were made to the Pentagon to send in reinforcements, that it took so long for that to happen, for the National Guard to come. But I don't know if the committee can answer those questions. There's no doubt that during his speech on the Ellipse, before the crowd marched up to the Capitol, he did make some kind of vague comments as if he was gesturing to the police and maybe some members of the military. It would be great if you could join them, you know, comments like that. So it was unclear what he was trying to make happen at that point. But, you know, I think it's really hard to tell what would have happened if the insurrectionists had succeeded in finding Nancy Pelosi or any other member of Congress, or for that matter, Mike Pence. We do know that there are a lot of court cases going on, and there are people who have been indicted who posted threats on social media about what they wanted to accomplish that day.
We'll continue in a minute with Mara Liasson. More of your calls on this and other things, including the changing politics, it looks like, in the last week on vaccinations in the United States. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, 646-435-7280, or tweet a comment or question at Brian Lehrer. Mara, on vaccinations and the Delta variant, you noted on the network yesterday that in some conservative-leaning states like Florida, Missouri, Arkansas, and Louisiana, vaccination rates are now higher than the national average. And you noted that follows the rise in new COVID cases, more now in counties that voted for Donald Trump. Since Trump was the original promoter of vaccinations, Operation Warp Speed and all that, how do you see Trump supporters as having become the anti-vaxxers to the extent that they have?
Well, this is a really interesting phenomenon. I mean, one of the reasons that vaccination rates in those red states are up is because they were so far down before. And the vaccinations have become completely politicized, and there's a partisan divide on vaccinations. If you look at Trump counties and Biden counties, the vaccination rates are much lower in Trump counties. Now there's a little bit of an uptick. We've seen some conservative governors come out and really encourage their voters, their constituents, to get vaccinated. But in terms of the disconnect between Donald Trump's crowning achievement, and he legitimately can take credit for getting Operation Warp Speed up and running as fast as he did and getting the vaccine on board as fast as he did, he has not been a loud voice encouraging his supporters to get the vaccine. He said he thinks it's a great thing, but he always says, you know, I believe in your personal freedoms. And he has decided to kind of follow his base, not to lead it. And there is tremendous vaccine resistance among the conservative base for a variety of reasons. Disinformation is one of the biggest ones. But so what you have now, I originally thought, wow, all those conservative anti-vaxxers, that's a stunning display of disloyalty to Donald Trump since he considers the vaccine his crowning achievement.
Yeah.
But this is one of those cases where Donald Trump has not taken the opportunity to be what some Republicans have told me would be, he would be the savior of the country if he could get all of his supporters vaccinated. Because right now we have a pandemic of the unvaccinated. 99.7% of people who are being admitted to hospitals with COVID are unvaccinated. So now the big challenge is how to get people in red states, how to get people who are resistant to the vaccine, mostly because what for at least partly because of what they're hearing on conservative media, to change their minds and get it.
In a way, it's consistent with Donald Trump's career of running to the head of the parade of right-wing populism and saying that he leads it.
Yeah, in this case, though, it's interesting because there's a big split between people who don't want to take the vaccine and Donald Trump, who made the vaccine happen as fast as it did.
A red state
has to be resolved. Yeah.
Are red state politicians changing their tunes closer to the ground, governors and local leaders?
It certainly looks that way. I mean, Kay Ivey, who's the governor, Republican governor of Alabama, she's always been pro-vaccine, but lately she said something that was kind of shocking. She said it's time to blame the unvaccinated for the pandemic. Now, that's something, it didn't come out of the mouth of Mitt Romney or Joe Biden. That was a very conservative governor of a very red state. In Utah, the governor there has accused conservative talking heads of, quote, killing their listeners with misinformation. So, and of course, you had Sean Hannity go on the air and say that he was pro-science, pro-vaccine. The next day, he kind of confused his message by saying he isn't telling anyone to get the vaccine. But there's no doubt that there's been a change in messaging among some conservatives. Maybe one of the reasons is that they've gotten the same public health briefings as everybody else has, which means when there is an uptick in infections, which is what we're now seeing among the unvaccinated, there always follows 3 to 4 weeks later a huge surge of hospitalizations and then deaths. And right now, you know, remember Jared Kushner said famously, the pandemic was a blue state problem. Well, that's just not the case anymore. It's really more of a red state problem.
Yeah, and you talked about Governor Ivey. Alabama, according to the CDC, is the state with the lowest vaccination rates. That is also an indication of how misleading the rate of growth statistic can be on almost anything. So, like, if we're saying that the red states, including Alabama, now have the fastest rate of growth of people getting vaccinations, well, if you only have 2% of something and it goes up to only 3% of something, you've got a 50% growth rate.
Right. that's the key thing. The reason that the vaccine rate is so much higher in these red states is because it was so low to begin with. Yeah.
I'm curious, by the way, if this fits in to your portfolio as a national political correspondent, maybe this is more local politics, how you see the new politics of restoring mask mandates for public indoor spaces or requiring vaccinations by city workers in a few places. In fact, let me pass along some breaking news that listeners, you may be hearing right now for the first time. This just happened a little while ago. Mayor de Blasio just announced that he will require either vaccinations or weekly negative COVID tests for all city workers. That was not the case as of Friday. It was just going to be workers in the health and hospitals, public hospital system. Now it's going to be for all city workers after Labor Day. I think very few other cities have gone that far so far. Maya, San Francisco and Pasadena, and I'm not sure if anywhere else. Is this a national political issue for D.C. or purely a local issue in each locality?
Well, I think it's going to be more local. The White House has said they're not going to make federal mask mandates. They're not going to push for federal vaccine mandates. So this is going to be up to the states and localities. I think obviously L.A. reinstalled its indoor masks requirement.
Right.
Up until most places have been leaving it to individual businesses and employers. But I don't see a return to mask mandates or school shutdowns, but I definitely see a debate happening about whether people should be required to have a vaccine or a negative COVID test to do certain activities, go to an NFL game or fly, well, certainly flying on a plane, you still have to be masked for federal transportation. So yes, I think that we'll see how bad this new surge is, but the worse it gets, the more you're going to hear about requirements like this.
Back to the January 6th committee hearing scheduled for tomorrow. Stephen in Highland Park, you're on WNYC with Mara Liasson. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We got you.
Hi. So I'm wondering if it was a wise move of Pelosi to reject Jim Jordan and the other one, I forget his name. By doing so, does she play into the Republicans' claim that it's all partisan, that she won't allow someone with an opposite view?
Well, the opposite view she's not allowing is the view that the committee shouldn't have happened in the first place. And I think that there's a real debate about that. First of all, this thing is so partisan to begin with, it's hard to imagine how it could get any more partisan. I think the first reaction when she rejected those two members was, oh, she just handed Republicans a big piece of ammunition. It's going to be just a Pelosi committee, you know, and it'll be more partisan. There was no way you were going to get a bipartisan committee in the House because the vast majority of Republicans, including the leadership, followed Donald Trump's lead and voted against having this committee in the first place. But I do think that the committee still can be useful in terms of uncovering what happened that day. But there's no doubt that she made a decision. She felt that Jim Jordan would be disruptive, that it would be just that he wasn't interested in finding out what happened that day. He was interested in undermining the investigation. And, you know, she made her decision. I think once the House voted against, once the House Republicans voted against having an independent commission, and once the Senate Republicans pretty much put an end to that, it was hard to imagine how you were going to get any kind of bipartisan inquiry on this.
Jackie in the East Village, you're on WNYC with Mara Liasson. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for the great work that you do. I would like to put to the table sort of food for thought concept, if you will, that perhaps the larger mechanism that's at play here, because, you know, let's face it, the United States has never seen January 6th before. The drive for a coup has never been in place here. And there's a reason why Donald Trump, after all of the evidence, insists that the election was fraud. There's a reason why two-thirds of the Republican people in Washington voted that the election should be overturned. And my theory comes from the seed in the Bush era of framing, which actually NPR covered, when they started hiring as media services these kids that were coming out of Yale and taking words like what happened in 9/11 and actually reframing the sentence, fast forward through all of this time to now that we have the social media mechanism that's out of control and manifests in our society as clickbait, which NPR covered when they had a journalist recently who went in undercover, that his recordings that are on his phone are now being used by the FBI, that he went into all those chat rooms. And so because my surmise from all of this is there's clearly something that's not, there's a larger mechanism that's at play. We're missing the point here. And in my own life, I have purposefully taken myself off of social media to curate my experience because I can't get a handle on it. I mean, I have...
Jackie, I'm gonna jump in for time. We're almost out of time, and we have former police commissioner Bill Bratton standing by. But are you saying that you think one of the reasons for January 6th was not even so much that they thought they were going to succeed in overthrowing the government, but to create a vehicle for so much additional clickbait online that it spreads their movement?
I'm saying that the missing part is Republicans have this huge media machine that we don't know about, as in we, myself, a Democrat. I'm not part of it because I'm not receiving the emails that are being sent to, like, my friend's mother 3 or 4 times a day by these people that are, like, saying that Biden is, you know, going to create one money thing. And it's, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right. It's amazing what's going around, the misinformation. It's such a big issue. And, Mara, it plays back into the vaccination misinformation infrastructure as well. We are just about out of time. You want to give us a quick thought in response to Jackie?
Yeah, look, social media, the algorithms that fuel social media, the business model of social media is just designed to be a perfect disinformation machine.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, who knows how to give a very brief closing answer when the clock is ticking. Thank you, as always. We'll be listening on the network.
You're welcome.